The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of K4 Wins. It's our weekly podcast that supports our website, k4wins.com. We keep it simple. The titles are the same. I'm Kip Kiefer. Usually the driver of this bus is Tony Curry, but he is unavailable this morning, off on a family mission. So we're going to have the K3 Hour coming up for you and give you everything you need to know for a successful week coming up. And you can always, once again, go to our website, k4wins.com daily. And the man who takes care of those functions and keeps you up to date on everything that's going through our pointy little heads in terms of what we like and what we don't like and sports commentary and betting advice each week is Kai Gregory. He is with us here on the broadcast. Kai's got a long background in the sports betting game and has some great expertise. And our other cohort this morning on this K3 edition of K4 is coming to us live from Las Vegas, Nevada. It's Case Kiefer, the editor of the Las Vegas Sun Sports Department, and certainly a guy that's become very prominent in the sports betting circles around the country, writes multiple columns every week, and is a strong participant himself and always opinionated and always ahead of the curve in terms of betting advice. I'm Kip Kiefer. I'm the executive director of the Birmingham Racing Commission, a long career in the gaming business. So enough for introductions. Fellas, welcome to our podcast this week, and really looking forward to talking about things. And certainly, Kai, I believe that Tony's first function every week is to throw things your way and give us a report on the activities of K4 Wins in the last week or so and how we've done overall for the season.
All right. Last night, 4-2, had a nice over, easy over in that NBA game. Not easy, but still got it there.
Yep.
And last week, 18-11. Last month, 84-41. And year to date, we are now 5-22. 272-4 for a 65.7 winning percentage. So still rocking on pretty well for the year. 522 wins, and we're not through month six yet.
That's pretty strong. Over 500 wins in just a month. Case, I guess the best place to start today is it's still in recent just a few hours ago, ending game number five in Oklahoma City. And as we expected, the Thunder took care of business.
Yeah, it was another interesting game. I guess we're now officially reached game six, which I thought was never going to happen in the series. So I'll have to take it on the chin for that and say that the Pacers have been better than I expected. I still think that game one is something we'll remember forever. And I think it's highly unlikely you play that game 100 times if they win, but they've done it time and time again. I think even if they don't win the title, I think we're going to remember this Pacers run because you see all the crazy stats, all the insane comebacks they've had. It's been super memorable, but it does kind of feel to me like we've reached the end of the road. Of course, I'm sure everyone saw Tyrese Halliburton's issues last night. He's playing on a gimpy calf, which always scares me. I mean, especially if I was the Pacers, I know he wanted to play so bad, but I almost just would have said, sorry, you're sitting out this game.
Yeah.
We're trying to rest you for game five. But how many times in recent memory do these calf injuries in the NBA just turn into an Achilles snapping? So I'm not saying that will happen here. I'm not a doctor. That's not my expertise, not my purview. But, man, it just worries me to hear that. We'll see if he's feeling a little bit better by Thursday night. But I was pretty shocked right after the game when the numbers posted for the next game. The total was right when I made it to 24.5, which literally exactly what I made it. So I had no play on the total for next game. I think I've played the total almost every other game this series and done very well. But I also thought, I mean, you go through NBA history, and we've certainly seen the boost throughout the playoffs this year. When a team's in a closeout game, they usually are worth an extra half a point or a point. Teams just tend to play a little bit better in closeout games. It could be that team, or it could be the team that's at the verge of elimination playing poor. So I actually thought this number should be like 6.5. I was shocked when it opened Oklahoma City 4.5. And even though I've got a bunch of Thunder's futures, I'm really hoping the Thunder win. I couldn't help myself. I bet some Thunder minus 4.5 for game 6. I know they've been terrible on the road. I think the last game was the first road game they covered all playoffs. And, you know, in reality, they did not deserve to cover game 4. There's some in-game hijinks. But, man, it seems a little short to me. I know now we're mostly looking at 5s, but still some pretty big sports books at 4.5. Maybe it seems too easy, and I feel like all the money's going to come that way. But I think Oklahoma City minus 4.5 for game 6 looks a little short to me.
Kai, what are your thoughts on the series after watching game 5 last night? And I know the over was it was never a sure thing, but it seemingly was pretty comfortable. But just your overview of the series, and what is you've expected? What has surprised you?
Well, you know, we did post, even though Case and I disagreed on it, we did post one future that we hit very early, plus 2.5. Mm-hmm. For Indy on the series, but I personally have plus 1.5 for Indy, and I'm really scared of that now because Tyler Halliburton's injury worries me to death. I'm not going to play anything until I see, you know, another couple of updates, but I agree, same the Case would say. And I especially later in the fourth quarter, I'd have sat him down because if you have any chance, in my opinion, for Indy to win, they have to have a healthy Tyrese Halliburton at least 80%, and to me, he looked like a decoy most of the second half, especially the fourth quarter when he was in there. He just kind of looked like a decoy on offense that wasn't moving great, you know, in my opinion. So if we don't see something talking about, you know, him being much better and a real report of him being much better, I would have to side with Case and go with the OKC in that game.
Yeah, because he's such a key player on that team, and if he's even less than 100%, which he almost certainly is going to be, it's going to be extremely difficult for them to stay alive. I would say my knee-jerk reaction is if Halliburton was good to go, I would expect Indiana, going back home, just the way the series has trended, to make the one last stand and get out of there to go to a game 7, only to probably be swamped if they go back to Oklahoma City. But now all bets are off, and that's very appropriate cliche in this situation until we engage Halliburton's condition. But I still, at best case scenario, he's not going to be even close to 100%, I don't think. There's no way. So I'm inclined to agree with you guys. I said going into the series that everything on paper, everything from a sensibility standpoint and what we've observed all year, Oklahoma City, I thought was inevitably going to be the champion. But I said I've been so surprised by this Indiana team and the fight and the resilience they've had, the way they handled Cleveland, the way they kind of bowed up and repelled the New York charge. You know, I said nothing about this team would surprise me if they did play above and beyond their capability. And I think that forecast has been pretty good. But yeah, now there's a dark shadow on this series. And I tend to agree with you guys. Tyrese Halliburton is such a key player, and he's clearly not right. So it's hard for me to imagine them even making that last stand and keeping this series alive. So I guess we can go ahead and pivot since we covered that pretty thoroughly. Let's talk about the National Hockey League. For those of you who haven't, I got to add one thing before that. We don't have our man Tony Curry here today. And if you've never heard the show, the three of us kind of stick the needle in Tony in a little bit, because Tony always has a bunch of statistics that everybody kind of snickers at. On days where there were thunderstorms and in 1975 this team did so and so. I mean, you never know what he's going to come up with. But I have to give our guy Tony some props, because Case mentioned that very first game, and you guys know that Tony's big stat that day was the key number in this series for Indiana is 110. When they score over 110, they win. When they score under 110 in the playoffs, they were 0-for. And the final score of that first game was 111-110. So let's give Tony some props, because the useless Tony Curry statistic in that case was spot on, Case.
And they scored 110 last night, right?
Yeah. I think that was the final. It was 124-110. Was that what it, or 129-110? Yeah. So. Tony Curry zeroed in with his stats on that, so that was kind of interesting. Case, the NHL playoffs, that's been a wild and woolly series. Hard to kind of predict. It's been a lot more scoring-oriented than I would have predicted, although Edmonton certainly has the firepower. But what are your thoughts there? And now that's moving into pivotal territory where that could be winding down at the blink of an eye.
Yeah, I mean, it could be over tonight, and I think probably is over tonight, especially by the betting market. Right now we have Florida, let's see it by the morning, about a minus 150 favorite. Again, wow. I think they're probably going to win, but that's a little rich to me. I think we were on the last time of the show right before game four, and I kind of said the same thing. Florida has looked like the better team. I think they match up well, but there's just really not that much evidence that there's this big a gap between these two teams. I know Florida probably had their best game in Edmonton on, what was it, Saturday, for game five, and you might just think they're going to close it, but I think it was in The Athletic. There was a really good story with a lot of statistical background that looked into teams that kind of get embarrassed late in a NHL playoff series. It was a long trend, many years, to shout out Tony with another trend. And by the way, I'm not the one that goes at him. I just snicker. You guys might poke fun at him a little bit more. But
I cannot help it. It is called the Tony Curry useless stat of the day. And that is what it is. It is the Tony Curry useless stat. And let's be honest, he has like 12 of them a day. He does.
Yeah. And Kai's been dealing with Tony for like 30 years, so he is the designated agitator around here.
Yeah, I typically just laugh, and I'm not a big trends guy, but I will say that there is a thing in the NHL playoffs where a team that gets kind of embarrassed or loses really lopsided typically bounces back extremely well. I know this one's going to be tough down there in Sunrise in a closeout, and I think everyone, including myself, is just waiting. You know, I guess the Oilers will probably be at morning skate here. I mean, probably right now, maybe 15 minutes. I mean, the big question is just who's going to be in goal. Obviously, yeah. they've bounced back and forth between Stuart Skinner and Calvin Picard all playoffs. They went back to Picard last game, which I know I'm a broken record. I always talk about that, but that's just – it's worked for them. He's come in and played well for Skinner for the most part. But you can hate Stuart Skinner as much as you want. You can tell me he's the worst NHL starting goalie in the league, which I would disagree with. But even then, I think that's as far as you could put him down. He's like the 32nd best goalie in the league. I mean, Calvin Picard's not top 50. This is a guy who's been a minor leaguer.
He's a journeyman.
Most of his career. So to me, if you get a notification, if we hear on the show or whenever that it's going to be Stuart Skinner, I think the value's got to be on Edmonton plus 135 tonight. Florida, the likeliest winner, but plus 135, that equals out to giving Edmonton about a 42% chance. And again, I just don't think there's that big of a separation between these two teams. We'll see what way the market goes. It's really been bouncing around a lot this whole series, but ultimately plus 135 is my buy point. It was the same way for game four. I ended up doing it, and Edmonton won. Florida, the likeliest winner here tonight, but especially if they go with Skinner, I know he, you know, has a chance to unravel and mentally isn't the sharpest, but, you know, just his tools, I think he's working with more skill than Calvin Picard. And if I was the Panthers, I'd be wanting to face Picard tonight instead of Skinner, which I think is the ultimate, one of the reasons why they should go with Skinner. We'll see what happens here shortly.
It'll be interesting.
But Picard, the defense, and y'all know, not a huge hockey guy. Y'all have turned me and Tony, especially in the playoff hockey.
We're working on it.
Picard looked like the defense let him down, that he got more breakaway shots shot on him. He had more things like that versus Skinner, in my opinion, and just some things that I also read. It looked like his defense has been better, and he's let the defense down. To me, it looked like
that could be true for last game. I mean, that could be true for last game, but I think I just always default on the larger sample size, and I think you could go the other way strongly for the playoffs as a whole. I mean, when they went down 2-0 to the Kings, they put him in, and all of a sudden the Oilers were like the best defensive team in the NHL. Their ascent really – matched up exactly with Picard. So while I can't say you're wrong for the last game, I do think the Oilers didn't play great on that end. I think for the series as a whole, for the playoffs as a whole, I think the defense has been better for Picard than Skinner.
Well, and you heard us talk about the Oilers because they are the chief rivals to the Vegas Golden Knights, where Case, of course, is headquartered. And they've had a lot of battles in the playoffs the last couple of years that have gone each way for each individual team. But the basic book on the Oilers for the last bunch of years has been they're an explosive scoring team. They have the two most gifted, probably offensive players in the sport. But from a defensive standpoint and a goaltending standpoint, they've always been too shaky to parlay that into a Stanley Cup win. And like Kay said, early on in the playoffs, the first two games, you'll remember, against the Kings, they go to Los Angeles and give up 5 and 6 goals respectively and get blown out in the first two games. They go to Picard. I've been calling him Pickard. So
that might be right. I don't even know. I've heard it both ways.
Yeah. So whatever, Picker, the picker was picking pretty good because he kind of rallied the team. And a lot of times you see that even in football, the backup quarterback comes in and the whole team rallies around him and plays at a different level. But Case said early on he's doing it. And that time they played the Golden Knights in that series. They're doing the Golden Knights a favor if they play Picard, because Skinner is just a better goaltender. Pickard has been a backup at best and spent a lot of time, I think predominant part of his last 3 or 4 years as a veteran in the minor league. So this is not a guy that's a marquee performer, but the Oilers were defying that label because they played brilliantly defensively in the Vegas series and continued, carried that over into the Dallas series. They won a lot of 3-2 games and tough, tight games that you just wouldn't expect them to win. And now it's kind of come back full circle because Skinner, once he got back in the net when Picard was injured, Skinner had a run of really good success, particularly in the Dallas series. I thought he was very good against the Stars, who have a lot of scores. Remember how hot Ratanen was going into that series, and the Oilers pretty much eliminated him as a factor. So I guess all that's building up to the fact that, I guess the Leopard can change his spots temporarily, but they come back. And the Oilers team we saw in Game 5 was kind of back to that same kind of stereotype of what they've been the last few years. But I will say, and Kai, I know you're a new, kind of keen observer on hockey, and we'll take the responsibility for dragging you onto the ice here. But you've been a pretty astute observer looking at it from not a biased standpoint of just looking at it from the game perspective. We've seen this Florida team a couple times in seemingly pivotal games go back home and just lay an absolute egg. They did it in the series against Toronto where they won big on the road. Florida's success on the road and throughout the playoffs has been remarkable. And then they did it in the Carolina series where they went home and got shut out. So I'm not really sure what we're going to see tonight. I'm not going to be stunned if the Oilers win that game and force a Game 7, which would be the ultimate drama. So looking at it from kind of the new hockey fan perspective, what does your logic tell you is going to happen tonight?
Well, one of the things I was looking at was the 15-8 score of the last 3 games. What you just talked about, what they did those first 2 games, giving up 6 and 5 in the very first round, makes you go, okay, well, maybe it's not a trend or something that you can follow. Let me say before I finish that I'm loving this Coastal Sports Network, the layout here, and 102.9 The Game. Really appreciate them.
Yeah, well, Angel Martinez.
And have our show looking at this. But, going in, we kind of said it was a toss-up, but I think Case, you were on Edmonton as a whole, weren't you? But biggest bet of the year, but kind of small.
Well, I had Edmonton. I had a really big Edmonton future, and I actually kind of hedged it. The only thing I bet futures while I was going on the series was I said Florida +1.5 games, -200 was, I know people don't like -200, but that was what I gave out officially and made a huge bet on. So that's already in the bank.
Okay, cool. So I personally, just watching it, I like the way Florida is playing on offense, especially, and the way they're attacking. I from somebody who hasn't been watching hockey for 20 years, I feel like Florida is attacking the goal more and attacking on defense more. Is really what I've seen in the last couple of games. So I think Florida's going to buck their trend and they're going to close them out tonight. I'm not going to lay 150. I don't really want to do that if it would come down a little bit. And I think if they announce that Skinner's going to be in goal, maybe it drops down to 140 at game time, then something like that. But yeah, I think Florida closes it out. That's just, I don't, not something I'm probably going to bet because just in this situation, no, I had Florida last game and played them, but I don't think I'm going to do it this game. I really have liked the road teams in the playoffs so far as well here once we've gotten to the conference finals and the finals.
Yeah, I just get the feeling, and you guys can agree or disagree, but I get the feeling that one of these games is due to go under the total. And a lot of times when the pressure's on and the games mean more, it seems like it just doesn't make the scoring fest that we've seen in this series kind of figures to ebb a little bit. So I wouldn't be surprised to see one team or the other get up a couple goals and hang on to win 3-1 or 4-2. What do you guys think about that? I'm leaning a little bit under tonight.
I'm out on that, not because I've bet under the last two games, and obviously it hasn't come through. And I'm a glutton for punishment. If the number's set up right, I would still bet under, but it definitely doesn't look like that's going to happen. I made it tonight. Let's see. I think I made it 6.5 with the over plus 105 were my numbers, and we're right in the middle of that right now. Right now, to lay under 6.5, you got to lay mostly like minus 120. I just see, like, this has been such high event games, and the teams have been so attacking. Again, this is right within my number, so I basically, it's a coin flip, it can go over or under, but there's just, with what we've seen, there's no way I'm paying a high price on the under at this point. I wouldn't lay minus 120. If the under got to plus money, I'd be interested, but I think there's no way we're going to see that big of a move tonight. So kind of where I think we should be totals wise. I mean, we'll see if I think a lot comes down to Edmonton and if they could get back into their defensive bag here. Obviously that didn't happen in game five. I ended up betting Florida in game five, just kind of the same strategy I talked about here, where if you just try to take the market height. I think I've only bet the underdog like every I bet Florida, it looks like one favorite minus 130 in game three, but usually I've been on the underdog in the series. I just think the teams are pretty close, and you know, I don't want to be a broken record, but this is the same thing I said last Tuesday on the show. I really think this series as a whole has been extremely even. I think we've gotten the right winner in every game except for one. Game two, I really thought Edmonton dominated. They had way more chances of almost 6 expected goals I have here, which is just crazy, as high as you'll ever see in a Stanley Cup final game. And they still lost. I really felt that's when the series turned. I felt like we were going 7 games for sure. If there's one Edmonton really wants back, I know they got beat worse in 3 and 5, but I feel like 2 is where they really dropped the ball. If they win game 2, then Florida's fighting for their life here tonight, and it probably win, and we'd be going back for game 7. You know, I'm going to have to bet Edmonton if it stays that high tonight, but I don't know. In my heart of hearts, it feels like Florida probably gets it done tonight.
Yep. What do you think, Kai?
If I bet it, I bet Florida. And if I go total, I just call me a sucker. I'm staying over. I agree that it might be tense, but I don't know how the goalies are going to be. And right now, I just don't trust Edmonton's goalies at all to keep Florida under 3 goals. And if Edmonton's going to win, they're going to have to get up that way. So it's probably a 4-3 game. So it goes over again.
Well, this is the second year in a row we've had these two teams in the finals. I was with Case in Vegas last year when Florida wrapped up game 7, winning 2-1. Case, that was a big score for you last year.
Yeah, and this year would be too if Edmonton could win. I had a lot of Florida futures last year, and I really think that series ended up coming down to home ice, and Florida won in game 7. That's kind of – Kai was right, even though I didn't bet on them, so I had the futures. My official pick on the series was Edmonton in 7, and that was just because I feel like these teams are so close that if it got to a game 7, I feel like I'd have to take the home team. I still stand by that, so if Edmonton does win tonight, I think they have a great chance to win in 7. I'm glad you brought up that series, though. I don't think people forget. I mean, I think people remember, it was pretty memorable, but Florida was up 3-0, and Edmonton rallied back and came obviously within a goal of winning the series, so I don't necessarily think they'll be tight. I mean, they've been in worse positions than this, than down 3-2, going back to Florida, where all things considered, they've played pretty well the last 2 years. So they've been dead to rights before. In Florida, like you said, they've lost their last two closeout games. They also lost a home game to Tampa Bay in the first series. So they haven't been a sure thing in these kind of shut-the-coffin-door games, but we'll see if they could change that tonight.
And remind people who you have alive for the MVP trophy in the playoffs, the Conn Smythe. I know Draisaitl was one of them, and he is leading by far in how many goals. But does Edmonton have to win the series for you to cash? And are you still in good shape in any way in your futures bets on or not futures bets on your MVP bets?
Now you're opening a whole other can of worms. Not great. I do think Draisaitl is in the lead slightly over Connor McDavid if Edmonton ended up winning. Obviously, he set the record for overtime goals in the postseason. I think he has 4. And by the way, he should have 5 because he scored for the Golden Knights to prevent a sweep in game 3, if you remember that series.
With it went off his stick. Yeah. Yeah.
I have Draisaitl for the Oilers. I've never added Connor McDavid just because I don't think the Oilers have ever been in a great standing in the series. Again, I hate to keep going back to the same thing, but I think they needed to win game 2 to make me feel good about the Oilers. Florida is where I just am completely – I'm not surprised at all they're on the eve of winning the Stanley Cup. If you go back to at the beginning of the playoffs, I kept saying Florida, this talent level, just the top to bottom, they looked so great. But I really thought if they end up winning the Stanley Cup, it's going to be on the backs of Alexander Barkov and Sam Reinhart, who I think was their best player throughout the year. Maybe even Matthew Tkachuk getting healthy, but he's only recently gotten healthy. I mean, Barkov has been totally invisible this series. Reinhart scored a couple goals, but he's been better defensively, both him and Barkov. I just can't believe they're on the eve of winning the Stanley Cup with, I mean, Sam Bennett's always been a great net front presence, a really useful player, but all of a sudden he looks like Connor McDavid a bunch of times in the series. He's just like a crazy scorer. He's leading the playoffs in scoring. I believe he's now -170 to win the Conn Smythe.
Wow.
Obviously correlating a lot with Florida winning. I have no Sam Bennett, so I really need Edmonton to win on that front. And then it seems like the only player that could catch him is Brad Marchand, who I thought was a great trade deadline acquisition, really firmed them up down the lineup. But all of a sudden, he's been totally revitalized by playing in Florida, too. I mean, he has played really been declining the last year and a half in Boston, and now he's turned back the clock. He's like seems like the leader. He's kind of overtaken Barkov as like the face of this Panthers team. He's
amazing.
Scoring all the time. So as much as it pains me to say, you know, as a guy with Barkov and Reinhart, Conn Smythe tickets, because I just thought it'd have to be one of those two guys if Florida won. I think the only one that can really catch Bennett at this point is Marchand. So it's looking like it's Sam Bennett, Brad Marchand, Leon Draisaitl, Connor McDavid. Those are the 4 we're down to, and I only have 1 of them, unfortunately, in Leon Draisaitl, so I'm not feeling great in that market.
Ty, you've got some close sport ties to Boston. What do you think the attitude there? Because everybody kind of thought Marchand was done, and now he goes to Florida. He's about to win a Stanley Cup.
Well, it's no secret, and to the people listening to us for the first time, I am a Red Sox fan. Loved the Red Sox since birth. Will always love them. I'm a Bruins fan just because it's Boston. However, I'm more of a Nashville Predators fan just because of the fact it's closer to here.
Yeah.
But you know, I've got family that lives in Boston, and they were heartbroken when he started getting better there, because I feel like he's actually playing better now. So it's pretty brutal.
Oh boy, he was the heart and soul of that franchise. Well, that's a good segue to pivot, because your Red Sox made earth-shattering news on Sunday night, and the timing was amazing because they had just swept the vile, hated New York Yankees. And tell everybody that may have been asleep at the switch the last 48 hours, what the Red Sox did on Sunday night.
Well, and Devers hit a home run in that game. Sunday. So he hops on the team bus and goes to the airport. And that, from everything I've been told, was sitting on the airplane. And they came and told him, "You've been traded." And they put him in a cab back to Fenway, which I think is wild. But, you know, him going to San Francisco, there's been a lot of stuff over the last few weeks, especially since he, you know, turned down playing first base. And for those that don't know, the Red Sox are playing more rookies right now than anybody. They've got four
youngest team in the league
in their regular rotation starting, and then even last night, Roman Anthony comes up with his first home run to help the Red Sox beat Seattle and continue their win streak. But Devers getting gone, in my opinion, it really seems like he was a cancer in the locker room. They've got a bunch of young guys that are team first because they're not making money, and they don't know that baseball is a profession and you're just in it for yourself just to make money. Instead, they're thinking team sport, which it's always been. You know, unfortunately, NIL, don't want to get down that, but you know, NIL is going to ruin it for college, but at least high school may still be a team sport. And watching the College World Series, seeing Arkansas yesterday, and
their guy pitched
a no-hitter, and the way everyone reacted, I think was beautiful, and one of the reasons why people love baseball so much. Well, Devers loves himself. I mean, when one of the greatest players ever in your baseball history, or most beloved, like Big Poppy, comes out and says, "Hey, man, eventually you got to realize it's not about you." You know, that was kind of the telltale. They get rid of $250 million in salary over the next 7 years, which is huge. You know, they've just wrapped up a pitcher. They just signed Bregman, so that's helping. But they've got all these young guys for the future. And now, if Bello can be what he was at Florida State, you know, he was the 12th pick in the first round last year. Coming to him, Harrison, the pitcher who struggled so far, but that's two other good prospects to put. They immediately put Harrison down to AAA. I think it's going to be great for them if Christian Campbell can continue to play the way he's playing. Marcelo Mayer, you know, play the way he's been playing, and Carlos Narvaez, who I think is a little bit out of his element yet, should still be AAA. But those guys keep playing really well, and I think it helps Boston, whether it be before the trade deadline or whether it be next year, be able to go out and sign somebody that can really help the team. And Devers goes to San Francisco. For San Francisco, they get somebody who has the potential to hit 30 home runs, which, if you don't know, the Giants have not had since Barry Bonds. They have not had anyone who hit 30 home runs since Barry Bonds was there. And I don't remember what year it was because I forget all the steroid stuff.
I'm surprised how much I agree with Kyle on this. I thought we might be butting heads. I actually kind of like this trade for both teams. I definitely like it for the Red Sox, and he hit on the main reason for me. You know, I'm sure some of the locker room cancer stuff and the personality is true. I don't know. That's not my expertise. So, like I said, I just look at, you know, this guy signed a $330 million contract. He's not the bastion of conditioning and staying in shape. He's not going to age well. That contract is not going to look good in a few years. They got the Giants to take that entire contract. I know Red Sox fans are, you know, kind of sick of trading away their best assets. So I've heard some of them freak out and can't believe this trade. I think it's a win getting off that contract, especially when you have all these young kids that are extremely promising. Now there's not going to be anything in the way of them. Also, the Red Sox, known as one of the best organizations in pitching development and kind of finding these diamonds in the rough and figuring out their arms. I mean, I think they got two talented guys in Harrison and Hicks that didn't necessarily work out in San Francisco, but you dump $250 million. You get these two guys that you can work with. They're kind of on the up right now. I know a lot of people are out on them. I still think they have a chance to make some noise just with the upside of these kids. I have a Christian Campbell Rookie of the Year ticket. It looks like it's dead because, I mean, Jacob Wilson for the A's, if you're not paying attention, it's like
he's ridiculous.
Historic rookie season. He's so good. But so I'm going to be crossing my fingers that maybe he falls off and Campbell can get hot. But I really didn't hate it for the Red Sox, mainly because of the money way. And then for the Giants, I actually understand because they've been chasing these big name players in free agency every single year and no one ever comes there. So then I feel like you've got to turn around and take a swing somewhere else. You know, I don't necessarily love Devers at the price, but I mean, the Giants have been looking for their power hitter and they just can't seem to get one. So, you know, take a chance with Devers, see if it works out. I am a little bit worried. We'll see how his power translates to obviously Fenway, where he's hitting it over, you know, the monster all the time, a smaller park. I mean, whatever, AT&T, or I still think of it as Pac Bell, such a bigger stadium. I'm worried that some of those home runs now are going to turn into flyouts. But again, I mean, the Giants are kind of playing with house money now in the race for the NL West, despite, you know, no one having much expectations for the season. Except for me, I think I mentioned on this show, I have a 50-1 ticket to win the NL East. I'm hoping to cash, but I don't hate it for them either. Just take a chance, see what happens. But I think for the Red Sox, you're able to get off $250 million, like Kai said. I don't have a problem with taking, especially with the sideshow that's encompassed Devers this year.
Well, that's
I worry about Devers, Oppo, Fields, doubles off the wall. That those are going to be out in San Francisco.
Yeah,
he's going to have a much more difficult time with the pulls because it's a larger field in Candlestick or in San Francisco. But I can still see his power getting there. His opposite field power is not as good. And that wall, which don't get me wrong, Red Sox fan, love the Green Monster, sat on top of it. It's awesome. But I just don't think his opposite field power is going to equate as well as it has been in Boston to San Francisco.
Yeah, that's certainly a concern. Let's give the Red Sox props too. Was there a better offseason acquisition than Crochet, the pitcher? He's been awesome.
Well, graduated from the University of Tennessee, is where he played his last year of college ball. So just to reference that, but he's been pretty good. And let's be honest, he was incredible with the White Sox. He had no help ever. Sorry to interrupt, Case.
Oh no, I was gonna bemoan more Red Sox futures fate because I have Crochet to win Cy Young. I think the only guy I bet in the AL, but I mean Scooble's just so ridiculous. So I cashed on last year. I think I had him 25-1. I need Scooble to take a few weeks off and ice his arm, maybe a month, because I think Crochet's right there. But I feel like Scooble's got to be the odds-on favorite right now. I haven't looked at the market in a while though.
So
we've got some of those also up. I don't think we've mentioned it at K4Wins.com.
Yeah.
Our website, K4Wins.com, you can go there. It is a free site. We've got a lot of great things up there. Kip, we still have the horse racing blog you had. We had the last one. We're going to get another one before the next one. And we're going to have a couple of really good write-ups. Kip is going to, I'm putting him on the spot here, give us a nice SEC football preview write-up before the season begins, which, is his specialty. And it should be incredible coming up. Looking forward to that. Looking forward to talking more baseball then.
Yeah, Kai's on fire with the segues today because it's never too soon to talk about college football, and I want to get into that a little bit. But before we leave the Ball Diamonds, what other impressions do you guys have? We're not to the All-Star break yet. Usually that's where everybody kind of assesses what's happening. Of course, that's right around the trade deadline. Just off the top of your heads, what teams are the biggest surprises and what team may be the biggest disappointment or disappointments? Kai, what do you think?
Well, again, one of the greatest things about being here on the Coastal Sports Network and 102.9 The Game is that we're live, and so we can actually talk about games that are happening today also.
Yes.
People keep those, I think one of the greatest stats for me, and it might be a Tony Curry useless stat, but one of the greatest stats for me as a Red Sox fan is the fact that the Yankees have not led in a baseball game since Thursday night against Kansas City. And
they're not scoring any runs.
They've only scored five runs in their last five games, three of them losses. Best record in baseball, Detroit Tigers. Now, it's because they played, one more game than everybody else on that. Your best home record, the Mets, 27-10. Worst home record, no surprise, Colorado Rockies. 7-27. Your best road record is Detroit at 22-16, and the worst road record is the White Sox at 7-31. The teams you always expect to be there are pretty much leading. It has been shocking to me how poorly the Padres have played since their start. In my opinion, but. The hottest teams in baseball right now, just over the last 10. I mean, the Red Sox, since they've won six in a row, are 8-2. Houston is 7-3, which that really boggles my mind because I just don't think very much
like
of that
team.
But I was trying to see where I had Minnesota 2-8 in their last 10.
And they've been getting clobbered.
Yes, they have fallen off just tremendously
because they had that long winning streak. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's been horrendous. So to me, I think the Yankees' last five games has been shocking. Red Sox have never expected the Red Sox to squeeze them, especially with the pitching matchups that were going on in that. But, just looking at some of those things is the reason for some of the games that I really like today. I mean, there's really high juice in the Pittsburgh-Detroit game, but you can't bet against Detroit, in my opinion, tonight when Pitt's road record 10-25 and Mize is on the mound for Detroit. There's some just great matchups, including Minnesota at Cincy. Cincy, you know, Tony's team is only a minus 20 in this situation, and Minnesota's lost, you know, 8 of their last 10 games. So there's some great matchups today. And unfortunately, I do think the Yankees may get back on the winning side. But I also really like San Francisco, even though it's minus 55 now, in their game against Cleveland tonight with, you know, Devers' debut.
Case, what are your just general thoughts on where we are in the baseball season? What are you surprised by? And, of course, probably it seems like everybody in the world's a Yankee fan. What's your impressions of them? How can this team have a complete power outage?
Yeah, it's been a little strange. I just think maybe it's a crash back down to earth because they are just running so hot for the beginning of the year, hitting so many homers. And I will say, I actually looked this up live on the show maybe last week or 2 weeks ago, and then you dropped off. We couldn't talk about it. But leading the league in strand rate is the Yankees. They strand more runners in scoring position than anyone. I was looking it up because you were complaining about the Braves. I think the Braves are actually third. This was a week ago.
Yeah.
I'll have to find it again to see. But pretty crazy that the Yankees are as many runs as they've scored, number one in the league in strand rate. Usually there's a lot of noise in that. It's pretty random. It ends up evening out. I don't really even think that's been a problem here in the losing streak. They just haven't been getting enough runners on base in general. I will say my overarching team that I've been so impressed by over the last month that I would look out for correlates with the Yankees because I guess we should never be surprised with this organization. I just think they're smarter than everyone. They always outdo expectations. But the Rays are red hot. I believe they're like 2.5 back.
Yeah, swept the Mets.
The Yankees now. A lot of these young pitchers are playing better. Their offense has leveled up. You know, I thought going into the year you could convince me any of these five teams were going to win the AL East. I ended up largely backing the Red Sox, which looks like a mistake now, although I don't necessarily – not counting the Red Sox totally out now, especially not as far as making the playoffs. They're right in the thick of the wild card race. But, you know, with as well as the Yankees have hit for the year, I think it's going to be kind of hard to come back from six games. So if I'm the Yankees, the only team I'm starting to see in my rearview mirror that worries me a little bit is the Rays. Doesn't make much sense because talent-wise they're so far behind, but this is just what they do. They find edges in the most minuscule ways, and it seems like they're doing it again this year. We'll see if that can continue, but I've been so impressed by the Rays here over the last month or a few weeks.
Yeah, because Kai was just saying the Mets have the best home record in baseball. The Rays just went into New York and swept them over the weekend. So it's a crazy season. I'm not going to moan about the Braves. I do that plenty online and every place else, but boy, they're a disappointment. And maybe this is a little bit out of sorts because Brian Snitker's an organization man. He's beloved there. He's been with the organization 35 years. He got a World Series a couple of years ago, but this team just doesn't play with very much urgency or passion. There's this attitude, even amongst my friends in Atlanta, longtime Braves fans. You guys even said it a couple of weeks ago that this team is going to make a run. I keep watching, guys, and I don't see any run in this team. A team that cannot put the ball in play with the bases loaded, nobody out, constantly strands opportunities. They've got starting pitching that has stepped up to, I mean, Grant Holmes struck out 15 guys the other day, and they lost 10-1 to the Rockies. It's just a disaster in Atlanta, and I don't see it getting any better. Austin Riley and Matt Olson strike out at an alarming rate. Acuna's back, and thank God for that because he's picked up pretty much right where he left off. But this team is a hot mess right now, and I suggest that maybe the good old boy pat him on the back, always saying in press conferences, "I think my guys are trying too hard." I think maybe it's time for Brian Snitker to go upstairs and work in the front office and bring in some kind of fiery manager that's going to demand a little bit more urgency and effort from these veteran players, because I think Kai hit on the Braves' biggest problem before. I think a lot of these guys are just kind of high-paid individual sort of talents that they're just not much team essence there. And I don't care how jaded and how rich you get in team sports, you still have to have a little fire to be successful, in my opinion. And that might just, yeah.
I completely agree on one front and disagree on the other. I agree that I think Snitker, I think they need the change. I know he's been there forever and it seems like it won't happen, but I really do think, I mean, what do we see spark baseball teams are kind of like these ruts. I feel like it's a change like that. So I completely agree with you on that. I do think you're falling into the fan just overly negative. I mean, they're 8 games under 500 right now. I already have a side bet with Kai. I think, what did we have? Over 4.5 division leaders in the All-Star break. I'll make a side bet with you. The Braves will end the season with a winning record. There's just so much noise. They've been so unlucky and clustered luck. I mean, they still have a positive run differential on the year. To say they're not going to make a run, I mean, that would just go against every piece of statistical evidence we have. They're still one of the more talented teams in baseball. They're probably not going to make the playoffs. It's going to be a disappointing year, no doubt. But I mean, to not make a run, so they're going to finish like 10 games under 500. I just don't buy it with the pitching performances they're going with. All the peripheral metrics say that this is still an above average team. I mean, not even peripheral metrics. Just look at, like I said, run differential. You know, I know we were talking the other day, they have this stretch with the Mets and the Phillies coming up. This really does feel like sink or swim, but I'm not even really ready to say they're going to get crushed here against the two leading in the division over these next weeks. I did bet them tonight. Now I bet Spencer Schwellenbach basically every single start.
Oh,
so I'm on them tonight against the Mets because I think he's awesome. But I just, you know, the run might not be enough to get them into the postseason or whatever, but I do think that, you know, right now, if you're asking me what their record's going to be the rest of the year, I think it'll be well over 500.
Here's your run differential information for your Braves. They're 31-39, and they've scored 12 runs more than their competition, and they're 8 games below 500 with a plus 12.
That's hard.
To change that up, Toronto's 38-37 winning record, and they're minus 12. Seattle's 36-35, minus 4. Arizona's 36-35, minus 5. Atlanta, only team with a losing record with a positive run.
Yeah, so that may indicate.
I had a useless fact for you.
Yeah, well, that's pretty significant. So you guys have made me feel a little bit better, but I've just seen too many times guys come up with the bases loaded and strike out with nobody out. It's just hard to watch day after day. And losing a game, that's a free square. The Rockies have been swept 11 times this year. Going into Sunday's game, they had the worst record after 70 games in the history of baseball, and they beat the Braves 10-1. With the Braves pitcher striking out 15 Rockies, it's incredible. In this Mets series, they're gonna throw Schwellenbach, Sale, and Strider. Strider looks like he's maybe getting back on form. In his last start, he was dominant. So I don't know. We'll see. But this team is too good to be wallowing like they are. But some interesting stats and some interesting impressions. They've got an up-and-coming manager, maybe superstar. Former Major League player Mark DeRosa is managing on their Double-A level. And that team is doing phenomenally well. So maybe that's a little preview into the future if they do make a change. Maybe Mark DeRosa, who was really popular as a player and has been in broadcasting, has been on MLB Network, he might be the heir apparent in Atlanta. Let's
get the Mets for a good series price plus money, though, in this.
Oh, really?
Even the Mets are pretty much 500 on the road, but if they go 2-1 versus that pitching, I think you can get them plus 65 on a series price right now in Atlanta. So I would take it in a heartbeat. Don't shake your head.
I'm sticking to the Braves. I like the Braves in this series, especially tonight. I like Schwellenbach, but we'll see.
Yeah, he's got so many pitches and so much talent. A lot of people probably haven't heard of him, but he's a guy who literally came from nowhere. You were talking about the Red Sox developing pitchers. Schwellenbach was a shortstop in college, and I think he only pitched in like 9 games above the single A level before getting promoted last year, and this kid is phenomenal. So the Braves have some bright spots. I just hope they can get back on track. I do not want to get away, let you guys get away today, because we're getting down to the very end. I was looking at college football because I'm just yearning for that to get started. I'm so tired of lawsuits and courtrooms and settlements and begging Congress for help. I'm ready to see teams running on the field and the pageantry and the excitement of college football, even if we know it's got a different kind of glow to it right now with all of the things happening. But I want to get your guys' reaction. I was looking at the Heisman Trophy futures this morning. it absolutely blows me away. And maybe you guys would talk me back down off the ledge, but Arch Manning is the favorite to win the Heisman Trophy as of this morning. He's played two games.
That's political. That's a bunch of crap.
I've already been betting the futures markets as soon as they've come out. I've bet four Heisman numbers. Arch Manning is not one of them. I say numbers because really at this point it is about, you know, I hit a bunch of these at open just thinking that the numbers are way off and they'd go down. I actually agree with you. I'm trying to beat Arch Manning here. I agree it's the name, and I think he's going to be an amazing quarterback. I think he's going to be the number one pick in the draft eventually. We just haven't seen enough, and what we have seen, it's not like he's been a complete world beater. I think you know, in futures markets, the number one things I like to look for is a vulnerable favorite and stuff like this, and I do think he is a vulnerable favorite. However, what gives me pause and why I actually did consider betting him at one sportsbook that crazily opened to 10-1, which he's never sniffed 10-1 anywhere else, is this week one game at Ohio State that I think they will lose. I think Ohio State's the better team. I think it's tough to throw him in to Columbus and expect him to win. But if they win that game, the hype machine is just going to be in complete overdrive, and we're never even going to see him at prices like you see right now. So if you're like me and you're a portfolio guy, and let's say you're high on Texas, you think they win that Ohio State game, I can't really hate on you for taking a nibble of Arch yet, but my overall reaction is much like you, is I'm trying to go at Arch Manning in this market. I'm trying to pick off big numbers on other quarterbacks because I think despite Travis Hunter winning last year with that special two-way year, I do think this is a quarterback award. I think strongly the best quarterback will win it this year. So I've bet four quarterbacks, none of them Arch Manning, and I just really have to hope Texas goes up to Columbus in week one and loses, because I'm worried that Arch will just have it locked up by like week two if he has a big game, both on the ground and throwing against the Buckeyes.
Kai, what's your impression of the race, and what about Garrett Nussmeier? What do you think of him? Because he's number two right now in the futures.
Let's go. Like, Garrett Nussmeier, 12-1 in the portfolio. Lowest guy I've met.
I'll be honest. I hadn't looked at the Heisman race. I'm still, it being this early in the summer, I'm looking at portal transfers and the rankings and those kind of things and who's staying there and all that. So I have that. I go over that when we get done with your Heisman talk. But to me, I'm not making a prediction or any kind of Heisman bet myself right now for at least another couple of months, because I don't know how many of them are going to get hurt during the summer or early fall.
Yeah,
camp.
That's a good call.
That's happened to me a couple of times in the past. And so I stopped playing that future till like 3 days before the first game, which generally I do not get the kind of numbers and the great odds that Case gets.
Well, it's intriguing to me. I'm looking at team totals too. And Case, do you have any immediate impressions on team totals? Because I think it's absurd when teams get placed at 10.5. That means they have to go undefeated or you lose. And every single team that's in the 10.5 range, Penn State and Ohio State play each other. So one of them is for sure going to be eliminated from that bet. It was the same situation last year with Georgia and Texas. They were both 10.5. I find it amazing because I see everybody's schedule. There's vulnerabilities, and I can't believe Penn State is 10.5. I know they're supposed to be loaded. Drew Aller is in the top six as Heisman quarterback. I haven't seen any. I mean, he's a good, you know, solid, you know, field general, but I haven't seen anything spectacular that would indicate to me that Drew Aller is an elite quarterback. So any initial impressions on looking at team totals?
Well, we're going to be clashing a little bit here and agree in some others. Yeah, I think you did nail it. The only two 10.5s I've seen are Penn State and Ohio State. And I just think it's tough to, I don't know, it's tough to hang any other number. What are you going to hang for? If you're going to hang 9.5, people will slam over. Yeah, I think 10.5 is the right number for those two. There's no 10.5s in the SEC, although Texas has taken a lot of money. They're 9.5, -160 at the over.
But they've got Ohio State right off the bat, like you pointed out. And they've had Ohio State, as you pointed out. They go to Georgia. Even 9.5. I just think this is an interesting dynamic to discuss more at length as we get closer to the season, these team totals.
Well, a lot of them also. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say where we disagree, it should be no surprise to people who watched the show last year. And I will say, I'm a little uncomfortable with how much love they're getting, because I bet this, looking at who had they had coming back, they lost two top 10 picks, but everyone else is back. They have a completely loaded roster. They stole maybe the best defensive coordinator in the country. I already think so highly of Andy Kolpnicki. I love Penn State this year. I bet them to win the national championship. I have Drew Aller to win the Heisman at 25-1. Again, more of a numbers play. I don't love him as much as Nussmeier, who I bet at 12-1. Or even DJ Lagway, who I think if Florida has a big year, it's going to be because they might have him at 25-1. But I am on the Penn State hype train. I loved them last year. I think you could make the argument. And I know there's questions about James Franklin and big games, but if you followed me, you know my biggest thing is I love fading these narratives because you get better prices. You know, Georgia was the team that couldn't get it done forever, so I happily bet them 12-1 to win the national championship in 2021 or whenever it was they won. Michigan couldn't get it done. They rolled to the national championship. I think – at least when I bet it, you were getting better prices on Penn State because of their reputation. I will say now it kind of makes me cringe. I've seen all these preview magazines come out. They're number one in the nation. A bunch of people are calling them for what I thought I was going to be out on a limb, which I still kind of am with the numbers I got. But I am pretty high on Penn State. I think them and Ohio State are neck and neck in the Big Ten. And bottom line, you're not getting the prices on Ohio State that you could get on Penn State. So that's why I'm officially a Nittany Lion going into the season.
Kai, bring us to the house with your early, early impressions of this year's college football season.
Well, you know, I'm going to go to the opposite end of the spectrum from where Case went, because looking at teams that are in the preseason way too early, Sporting News top 25, like Florida, who's over under 7.5 and the juice is 35 to under. Or to, Miami, who over under 8.5, but their over is 170. So you're telling me Carson Beck is going to do better than Cam Ward? No. They're lucky they play in a weak conference. Then you got Ole Miss over under 8.5, 145. I think Lane, even though they again, cleaned up, you know, he's Mr. Portal, did that. I mean, but you got Notre Dame at 10.5. Plus 20 to the over, minus 60 to the under. Ohio State is minus 45 on that under, 10.5. But then where's South Carolina? South Carolina is top 25 preseason, and they're over under 7.5.
Wow.
How are you going to be top 25 and it be 7.5? Tennessee, top 25, over under 8.5. I don't think 8-4 is not going to get you, you know, where it could, but some of the things I wanted to point out just to look at as we get a little bit further, top 10 transfer schools out of the portal. LSU, Texas Tech, Miami, Ole Miss, Oregon, Florida State, Missouri, Auburn, North Carolina, Kentucky. You know why North Carolina actually snuck in the top 10? Because they had 30 three-star transfers, only to be outdone by West Virginia, who was like number 70, with 49 three-star transfers.
Oh, my gosh.
Pretty awesome.
So we got multiple mediocre players, and that's going to propel us to the promised land. Well, we'll see if that works out. Guys, this has been great. I'm going to throw out, as we wrap it up here, my absolute dark horse, and I saw today he's like plus 2,500 to win the Heisman Trophy. It's a quarterback. I think John Mateer is going to be one of the most intriguing guys to watch this year at Oklahoma, coming with his offensive coordinator. Can he bring that he threw for a gazillion yards last year at Washington State. That's the kind of guy with the glitz and maybe the potential to really light it up, and we'll see what he does in the SEC. But that's the name that I'm going to throw out here as the ultimate dark horse. Case, any merit to that idea?
I have not bet that, but I like that a lot. That's one guy I would look at. I do think, you know, if he didn't come with Ben Arbuckle, or if it was one of the two, I would be kind of skeptical, but both of them, I really like their potential. I haven't bet any win totals yet, but they were one certainly. I was looking at the over. I'm just a little bit worried about their schedule. It's one of the toughest in the SEC, and I'm just not a big Venable guy. But I do think he's been very smart. It looks like he's handed over both units, and I do think this offense should be a lot better. So I like the way you're thinking. It's ultimately not one I've gotten to, but if I had to make a list of I've mentioned that I bet four, so I might as well just list them in case I haven't yet. The guys I bet, if maybe I would add it to it, I might be him. I bet Garrett Nussmeier at 12-1, DJ Lagway at 25-1, who it's interesting. Kai mentioned Miami and Florida in the same breath, because I think this is two where I'm really going to be on the edge of my seat looking for updates. and this goes into the injury thing. I bet this before the injuries come out. I mean, both DJ Lagway and Carson Beck didn't throw a single pass during spring practice with shoulder injuries, I believe. So this is going to be a terrible bet if Lagway's actually hurt. But I think that these are two camps I'm really going to be tied into to see how Lagway and Beck are looking. I wouldn't rule out Beck doing well at Miami. He's not going to be better than Cam Ward. Like Kai said, I think where Miami could potentially be better is their defense just gave up so many points last year and was such a disaster. Offense is – this is one of the biggest lessons I can impart when handicapping teams going into the year and look at stuff like win totals. Offense is a lot more sticky than defense. If you have a great offense, even with a big turnaround, the offense is usually great again the next year. Defense is really hard to project. We can have a team be awful on defense one year and great the next year. I just don't see how Miami's not a little bit better, but we're gonna have to see how Beck and Lagway are throwing. So yeah, I bet DJ Lagway 25-1, Drew Aller 25-1, just because I think so highly of Penn State. I think they have all the infrastructure there. And one bomb, 100-1, Sawyer Robertson, who everyone came after. He was getting huge offers. Baylor really ponied up and got a ton of money to keep him. And I know our show goes a lot of places in Alabama. I'd watch out, Auburn fans. I don't know if they should be a favorite at Baylor. So Sawyer Robertson was my bomb in the Heisman market.
Bet on Nico?
Nico, I didn't fire on him and have him go to a different school. I'd rather have Tennessee quarterback than UCLA quarterback.
But you got Joey Aguilera, Kai. You're in good shape there. We'll see what happens.
Brandon on the next year.
That sounds good. Hey guys, this has been great. We will this K3 edition. Go to k4wins.com. Kai is the keeper of the crypt there and has all kinds of great information up for your perusal. It's a free site, k4wins.com. Check it out frequently because betting on sports is exciting. Winning when you bet on sports is a hell of a lot more exciting, and that's kind of our creed here on the show. We're going to have the fourth member of the team back next week for some more useless stats and all of his amusing contributions. Our main man, Tony Curry, we missed him today. So tune in for that next week. Thank you to Angel Martinez and the Coastal Sports Network and the game down in Florida for having us in today. And we will be with you the next time right here on the K4 Wins podcast. For Case Kiefer, Kai Gregory, and Kip Kiefer, have a great week, everybody.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.